Good evening, everyone. Hello. Good to see you all. Hope I get this right. Okay. It's great to be here again, even if you can't remember my name 2 weeks in a row. But you spell it J-U-S-T-I-N, no E at the end, just in case you were wondering. But it's really good to be here. Before I start, I was told that tonight it was going to be decorated in snow, in a snow theme. And I thought, well, I'll just let it go. But it's old, see? But anyway, the passage I have tonight is about a farmer. And unfortunately, things don't really grow that well in the North Pole or the Arctic or wherever like that. So I thought I would take us from a snowy theme, using a joke, into a farming theme. So I'm going to tell you the best joke I know. Okay. There's once this guy, and he is the biggest tractor fan you have ever met in your life. I mean, this guy's got everything tractor in his house. I mean, he's got tractor posters, tractor magazines, tractor bedspread, tractor boxes, tractor face cloth, tractor toothbrush. I mean, this guy is tractor mad. I mean, it's everything about him is just tractor mad. Anyway, so one day he's driving through the fields, and he gets to the field, he sees the John Deere 5600 LX, and he is overwhelmed. This is the greatest tractor he's ever known. I mean, this thing is out of this world, and they're so rare. So he stops the car, pulls over, runs into the field, and he looks at it, and he is just in heaven. This thing is the most beautiful thing. Oh, and he thinks to himself, I wonder if the owner's home. Maybe he'll let me in. And he goes and knocks on the door, and there's nothing. Anyway, so he decides, well, I'll just go have one more look. And he thinks, well, maybe it's open. And he pushes the button, and it's open. And he gets inside. Oh, and it's got leather seats. Oh, it's the dream. He dreams, and he's like making the tractor noises. And he's going, and he's just imagining he's plowing through the fields. And oh, man, he's in heaven. And he thinks, oh, if only I knew where the keys were. And he pulls down the sun visor, and lo and behold, the keys fall in his lap. Oh, and he's in, maybe this guy won't mind if I start it up. I mean, he's not going to mind. Starts it up. Oh, comes to life. And he's so happy. He's just like, yes. And he starts driving it through the field. Amazing. He loves it. Anyway, meanwhile, the owner gets out the shower, and he sees somebody's driving his tractor, and he runs outside, and he says to this guy, what are you doing? And this guy's like, I just want it. And he says, I don't care. Get off my field. And this guy is devastated, absolutely devastated. He goes home, tears his posters up, burns all his magazines, rips his bedspread. I mean, everything. He just gets rid of it. Just cannot stand it. Cannot stand the sight of tractors. So anyway, he goes to like a pub. And this is about 10 years ago. And the pub, before the laws came in, was filled with smoke. Anyway, so he's sitting at the bar. And he's just sitting there, and he's so depressed. And he takes this big swig, and all of a sudden, the smoke disappears. I mean, and the barman says, sure, how did you manage that? I mean, we've been trying for years to get rid of all the smoke. What did you do? He says, well, I'm an ex-tractor fan. Okay, it's not really funny when you have to explain it. But anyway, so I've hoped I've transported us back into Farmville. What are we going to do is... I want us, instead of reading the passage tonight, I'm going to play an audiobook version of the passage. And I just want us to still ourselves, and then I'll play it, and let the words flow. The passage is full of beautiful figures, and you can just let your mind's eye wander as you listen to what the passage is saying. Okay, so I just want us to still ourselves, close our eyes, and then I'll start it. Just take a couple of deep breaths.
That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it, while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying,
A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still, other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear.
The disciples came to him and asked,
Why do you speak to the people in parables?
He replied,
The knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Those who have will be given more, and they will have an abundance. As for those who do not have, even what they have will be taken from them. This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. You will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. Truly, I tell you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see but did not see it, and to hear what you hear but did not hear it. Listen then to what the parable of the sower means. When people hear the message about the kingdom and do not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their hearts. This is the seed sown along the path. The seed falling on rocky ground refers to people who hear the word and at once receive it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. The seed falling among the thorns refers to people who hear the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. But the seed falling on good soil refers to people who hear the word and understand it. They produce a crop yielding 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown.
Right. Basically, basically the story is about a farmer or a sower, and the sower goes and he throws seeds, and it lands in different types of soil, and obviously it goes through the whole thing, and then it lands in good soil and it sprouts up. Now, in order to understand this parable, I want to approach it first from two sides. First, this parable fascinates me because it deals with the complexity of being a person of faith in an unbelieving society. We are people who are moved or have been moved. The gospel and its main messenger, Jesus, have stirred something deeper within us. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that movement. We wouldn't come to this place if we hadn't in some way been stirred. This movement, it excites us. It revives us. It informs us and becomes part of the very essence of who we are. The next question from this is, why does this not stir others in the same way that it stirs me? How could they not see what I see? How could they not be moved in the same way that I am moved? Why don't they just get it? And I think the disciples are key to understanding this. They've been with Jesus for some time now, and they left their lives for Jesus. They had a passion for what Jesus was saying. They saw on one side many people following Jesus and his teachings, and whilst on the other side, people cannot stand the sight of him. They might too have been asking the same questions that we ask. How can they not see this? Why are they not believing what they're being told? Why are some accepting the ideas of Jesus and later on turning from their faith? We just don't get it. We don't know what is happening. Why? Why? Jesus might have responded with this parable. He doesn't answer the question as to why it happens, but rather shows them that it happens. Some people will come to faith while others won't. Some might not respond to the gospel. I think that this message shows us that the disciples are grappling. Jesus is trying to teach them something here. This is not as easy as just, you know, it's a difficult kind of thing. It's a difficult thing. It is hard to see people you love not responding to something that you would give your life to. How can they not see it? How can they not feel it? I think if we understand that this is one of the root issues of this parable, then we can start to sort of unpack some more of it. In this section, I want to focus on the sower. I renamed the parable. I like the title, The Generous Sower, because you'll see that this sower is extremely generous. I am not a gardener, and I am not in any way a farmer. But I do understand how planting something works. We take some soil, and in South Africa we have different kinds of soil, but we really try to get some good soil, and we throw some manure on it, and some people would throw bone meal on it, and then we'd make a little hole, we'd stick a seed in, and then we'd cover it, and we'd water it, and we'd look after it, and hopefully something would grow from that. That's how it works. Now, if you're a farmer, and the way I understand farming, I mean, I'm not a tractor fan, but what happens is you sort of put a line and then you plow and you get your field ready and you make sure that your field is ready, and then you come and you sow your seeds into the field. And then hopefully, with a bit of rain and a bit of watering, that will come up. Okay? So you've prepared your field. You know the soil and you've working the soil. But this story, it seems that the sower has not prepared the field. It seems, what? He does not know the soil. Why would you throw valuable seed on the ground where it will not yield any crop? But yet the sower continues to spread the seed. Why is he doing this? What is Jesus trying to say in the midst of this? In the parable, there are four types of soil. And from this, we can ask ourselves, what qualifies as good soil? Jesus is going through different types of soil. What is good soil? And it's difficult because my understanding of soil is that soil cannot change itself. If it's hardened and rocky and thorny, it just doesn't grow anything. And will it be unproductive forever? I think we need to delve a little bit into the Gospel of Matthew, where we find this parable. And it's actually quite fascinating that this parable almost sums up the Gospel and the disciples and the way that Jesus interacts with people. And I'm going to be looking at a lady called Elizabeth Johnson. I used her as the way that I would look at this. And she says, one can find many examples of each kind of response that we find in this parable in Matthew's gospel. There are many in Matthew's stories who hear the word of the kingdom and do not understand, including the religious leaders who are opposed to Jesus from the beginning. The crowds respond positively to Jesus, especially to his miracles of healing. Yeah, we get it. We get it. Yet they turn against him at the crucifixion. They demand for him to be crucified, leaving us wondering if they truly understood the message. The disciples themselves might be included among those who fall away when trouble or persecution arises. One only has to look at during the crucifixion scene. They run away. They deny Jesus. And the rich young man, if you don't know the story, the man comes to Jesus and says, Jesus, what do I have to do to get into the kingdom? And Jesus turns to him and says, sell everything you have and follow me. And he can't do it. He's so besotted with what he has that he cannot let it go. And this rich young man, unable to part with his possessions, provides a great example of one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth choke it. It heals nothing. What about good soil? Who are those who hear the word and understand it, and indeed bear fruit in the Gospel of Matthew? In Matthew's story, it seems like the least likely ones are the ones that get it. Jesus tells the chief priests and the elders, tax collectors and prostitutes are going into the kingdom of God ahead of you. In the parable of the sheep and the goats, the righteous bear fruit, but the serving the least of the righteous bear fruit by serving the least of these. And even they are surprised to find that they've been serving Jesus all along. What about the disciples? Will they ever bear fruit? After telling this part of the Bible, or this part of the gospel, is followed by some other parables just after it. It's a big collection of parables. Jesus asks them right at the end, have you got it? Do you understand? And their answer is, yes, we get it. And they don't really get it. If you look at it in the gospel, they don't get it at all. What is remarkable, in spite of these failings, Jesus does not give up on his disciples. In fact, he continues to invest in them, even to the point of entrusting the future of his mission to them. The end of Matthew ends with Jesus giving it and saying, go, it's yours, you do it. Jesus tells Peter that he is the rock upon which he will build his church, even though Peter's understanding of what it means that Jesus is the Messiah is confused. Matthew's story has given us little reason to have confidence in the disciples. Little reason, that is, except for what Jesus sees in them. Which brings us back to the parable. The main character in this parable is, of course, the sower. The sower scatters the seeds carelessly. I think you would say he scatters them generously. It's for other people, it might seem reckless. Seemingly wasted much of the seed on the ground that holds little promise for a fruitful harvest. Jesus invests in the disciples who look similarly unpromising. He squanders his time with tax collectors and sinners, with lepers and all the manners of outcasts. Yet he promises that this generous sowing of the seed or the word will produce an abundant harvest. Often in the church or in religious settings, we want to be the sower. We can often see ourselves as the good soil, whilst portraying others as being in the bad soil. We often feel that we should not waste our time on others where the gospel will not bear fruit. We almost create a bubble of religious bias. We are the most important and it's ours. We create a monopoly of God. It's only our way, our church, or our truth. We need to ask ourselves, is that healthy soil? The question for me is, does that even sound healthy? I mean, if we just hold on to things, prime example, if you take water and it's flowing and it all of a sudden stops, and it just stands, what happens? Goes off. Just gets off. The same thing, yeah. If we do not move, if we do not grow, it goes off. We are like bad soil. There's no growth. Growth cannot occur where we are trying to be God. I think that when we look at this parable, we could probably say that the kingdom of God is all around us. It can fall on the most unexpected places. Places we never dreamt possible. In people we never thought possible. I met someone recently, and it was a part of my journey, and it was unbelievable. This person is someone who'd done so many bad things and landed up in jail and then turned their lives around completely. Turned it completely. And it was just someone who was just saying, I don't think you're too bad for God to love you. The problem is that if we are too busy holding on to our bias, we can actually miss what's happening right in front of us. One of my favorite stories is C.S. Lewis tells a story of I don't know the story 100%, but I'll tell you as best I remember it. And C.S. Lewis tells a story of there's these children and they're walking through a field and they get to a hut. And before they enter the hut, there's some dwarfs, the blind dwarfs, and they walk past and they're like, oh, this is the worst place ever. Oh, I just hate this place. And they walk into this hut. And the children decide that they're going to follow. These people decide they're going to follow. And they walk into this hut and they open the door. And it's the most beautiful place they've ever seen. I mean, just think of it. Waterfalls. It's green. It's just beautiful. It's sunny, unlike Edinburgh. It's just the most beautiful place you can imagine. And they walk and they are in amazement. And they see the dwarves, and the dwarves are like, oh, this is the worst place we've ever been in. Oh, it's just terrible. Oh, I don't want to. And C.S. Lewis said, sometimes being in hell is being in heaven and not knowing it. Sometimes being in hell is missing what God is actually doing in the world. God is still busy. Others might not see it, but the sower keeps on showering the world. Maybe God asks the same question of us. How can you not see what I am doing? How can you just not get it? When we open our eyes to the fact that God is still busy with the world, that God is moving, creating, and vibrant, it's as if we sing that song, Amazing Grace, how sweet the song. I once was blind, but now I see. Our eyes become open to what God is doing. The world moves from a black and white to color. Those who are seen to be the out are now important to us. It's almost as if the harvest turns to be more than we could imagine. I don't know much about harvesting, but the one thing I do know is that if you can get a seed to produce 100 times, or even 30 times, or even 5 times, you're doing pretty well. 5 times is really, really good. 30 times is unheard of. So when Jesus is talking about you're going to get 30 times what you planted, 100 times what you planted, it's like, this is really big. So I'm going to show us a video. And I love this video, and it's something I've saw it like really long time ago, but I just love it. Because this boy that you're going to meet is so outcast, you wouldn't even possibly dream that he's going to do what he's going to do. And how he transforms everyone around him. And it just took someone who believed in him to turn it around. So we're going to watch it. I hope, if it loads. No, too far. Come on. Is it playing? Okay, I'll go back and then forward, maybe. If we can.
Grace Athena High School in Rochester, New York, has a new, most unlikely hero, a special ed student by the name of Jason McElwain.
Let's keep it going.
Jason is the basketball team manager. For the past couple years, he's been assisting Coach Jim Johnson, helping with whatever the team needs.
And go!
Get him motivated and hand out water and just be enthusiastic.
Enthusiastic, to say the least. Despite being born with autism, Jason's father says his son has never had a problem expressing himself at basketball games.
You know, I was always concerned that he might get a technical and they lose a game because he, you know, start yelling or whatever.
Let's have a hard practice tomorrow, all hour and a half, and let's get ready for Acadia. Okay. Let's go.
One, two, three, two.
Because he has been so devoted to the team, for the last game of the season, Coach Johnson decided to let Jason actually suit up. Not to play necessarily, just to let him feel what it's like to wear a jersey. At least that was the plan. But with 4 minutes to go in last week's game, Coach Johnson stood up and pointed to number 52, Jason McElwain. After years of fetching water and toweling off other people's sweat, Jason was actually in a game. His first shot was a 20-footer from the right baseline.
Was it close? Did you almost make it?
I just airballed it.
I'm like, just, dear God, please, let's just get him a basket.
His second shot missed too, but the third was a charm. A three-point no-doubter. And Jason wasn't done yet. Not by a long shot.
If I wasn't there to witness it, I wouldn't have believed it, you know.
You caught fire.
I just caught fire. I was hot as a pistol.
Jason ended up shooting 6 three-pointers. One right after the other. He had 20 points total, and each time a shot went in, his teammates and the crowd went a little crazier. His last basket, right at the buzzer, created total mayhem. Because he is autistic, Jason says he's used to feeling different, but never this different. Never this wonderful. Steve Hartman, CBS News, Rochester, New York.
Well, in the words of Jesus, the reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing they do not perceive, and hearing do not listen, nor do they understand. With them indeed is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah that says, you will indeed listen, but never understand, and you will indeed look, but never perceive. For the people's heart has grown dull, and their ears are hard of hearing, and they have shut their eyes so that it might not look with their eyes, and listen with their ears, and understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are you, or blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Truly, I tell you, many prophets and righteous people long to see what you see. Where you are right now, people are longing to see what you see, what God is doing. People are longing to see that. They did not see it, and they wish that they could hear what you hear, but did not hear, So in closing, I just want to invite us. I just want to invite us to just stop and think about our week, to think about what has been happening in our week, the good, the bad. Just close our eyes and just think about it. In the midst of what has been happening in our week, the negative and the positive, where have we found God? Where have we missed God? Where have we shut our eyes and pretended that God was not busy? If we look at our world as a bigger you know, with all the stories that have been going around, the negative and the positive and the ups and downs of life, where is God in the midst of all of that? God is generously sowing seeds into that. Where is God? Jesus, we participate in your kingdom. We are participating in what you are doing in the world. Sometimes, God, you continue to sow even though we might not even see it. Sometimes you continue to sow despite our best efforts to stop you. But Lord, you are busy. You are with us. You are amongst us. You are constantly sowing your kingdom into this world. Lord, help us to be aware of that. Help us to see it so that we might celebrate 30, 100 times what you are doing. That we would not miss your generosity. That your care for us, your movement in our lives. Lord, as some of us are going this week into working with kids, help us to see how you are sowing into everyone. Help us not to miss what you are doing. Help us to slow down and be part of this gift. And as we go into our workplaces and as we work, Lord, in the midst of those places, you are still busy. You are still sowing. There's still grace to be found in the midst of all of that. Open our eyes so we might see. Open our ears so that we might hear. And make our hearts beat in tune with yours. In Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you. I bought my favorite seeds, if anybody wants to try them. I love pumpkin seeds. It's my favorite. So if you want, they're available to try. Thank you. You pass it right? Yeah, of course.